Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome back to Oh Snapped.
Hey, y'all.
Hey. So we are going to get into season 1, episode 2.
Yeah. Going just right in order.
Yeah, we are. Because remember last week we did season 1, episode 1?
Mm-hmm.
So now it's 2. Your
math is going to tell you it's 2.
Yep. So this one is Virginia Larzelier.
Virginia Larzelier. Ambitious and manipulative.
Very sexy. Very seductive. You know, could get anything she wanted as far as a man.
And the man she wanted was wealthy dentist Norman Larzelier.
When he found Virginia, he thought, wow, I got the world by the tail.
Their lives were good.
Everything just seemed perfect.
But that perfection concealed terrible secrets.
A woman like Virginia is never satisfied with just getting away with something. They have to keep getting away with something bigger and bigger.
He was doing just about everything wrong that she could think of.
A shocking murder reveals incest, drugs, and insatiable greed next on Snapped.
Virginia grew up in a small town in Central Florida. Jason Larzelier, Virginia's son, said that she was raised in Polk County, Florida, which sits in the middle of the state of Florida. He said it's very rednecky, rural farming town almost. And from that social bracket, my mom escaped. Though she came from humble beginnings, she was incredibly ambitious. Dr. Diana Falkenbach, forensic psychologist, said that Virginia seemed to have an unusual drive to achieve the things she wants, to get what she wanted or whatever she thought was rewarding at the time. She was not only driven, but also very sexy, beautiful, and very seductive, according to dentist Celeste Lester.
Who is Celeste to her? Like her dentist?
No. So we'll get into it.
I was like, why are they asking her dentist?
That's what, as soon as I saw this on the episode, I kind of laughed because I was like, okay.
Every time she came in to get her teeth cleaned, I mean.
She was very seductive.
Here's something I'm wondering.
Okay, shoot it. Tee me straight.
If we will remember, oops, no, I'm talking about episode 3.
Never mind.
I'm like, if you'll remember when I looked up the stuff for episode 3. So maybe I should wait until episode 3 to bring this up. But, spoiler alert for you guys, in episode 3, there's a woman who's also very ambitious and who, like, has this need to achieve. And she sounds like an Enneagram 3 to me, the achiever. It's like getting, making your accomplishments happen at the cost of, you know, when they're in kind of their unhealthy state, at the cost of whatever else it has to be. But this, that kind of makes her sound like that too, like, I guess I'm wondering how many are more murderers Enneagram 3s or women at least?
I think that it's safe to say that if you know an Enneagram 3 in your life, run.
I'm married to one. Do you see how scared I am right now?
Oh my gosh.
You're scared for us right now.
Yeah. I'm gonna lift you up in prayer.
Thank you. Thank you.
So anyway, like,
just
yeah.
Worry about that. You
okay.
Know? I just thought it was interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah.
Not interesting enough to spend any more time on it though.
Okay. Moving right along.
Virginia could get whatever she wanted as far as a man goes. Even though she was known as fun-loving and carefree, she could also push people's buttons, and people seemed to want to do what she wanted them to do. Does she have a how-to book?
Right.
By the time she was 30, Virginia was married 4 or 5 times, says Detective David Gammel.
Wow.
She accomplished a lot in a short amount of time.
Okay, yeah. Checking things off her to-do list. Marriage one, check.
Dr. Falkenbach said that Virginia would find a man and be happy 1 minute, but when that person didn't fulfill those needs anymore, she moved on to someone who might.
Hmm.
In 1985, in Edgewater, Florida, Virginia met a man who would change her life forever. He was a dentist named Norman Larzelier. See why they talked to
I'm
the dentist,
yep.
Celeste?
I'm getting it.
Virginia thought that he was perfect. Jason said that Virginia met Norman when he was in the fifth grade, and he said that they fell head over heels in love with each other. Donna Morris, a patient of Dr. Larzelier's, said that he had a reputation for being kind and gentle, and you could feel his compassion while he worked on you. Henry Frederick, journalist for the Daytona Beach News Journal, said that he was also successful in the community. He was established, he owned a lot of property. Dr. Helen Smith returns. I think she's in a lot of these episodes, and I gotta tell you, I'm not mad about it.
No, and what I am mad about is that I don't remember her from later episodes.
I think that they dropped her like a bad habit at some point. I don't know.
Yeah, apparently they did. That was big mistake, Oxygen. She's fantastic.
Big mistake. She is a forensic psychologist, if you've never heard her mentioned before. She said that it would be completely normal for Virginia to be attracted to someone like that. And he fell for her because she was attractive and outgoing, even though he was married when he met her.
Oh, man.
Not the way you want to start off a relationship. It's not ideal, right?
No, it's not.
It happens. No judgment here. It would just, you know, might have been a little easier if he had not been married. He divorced his first wife, and Jason said that they were divorced for maybe a month, 2 months, and he turned around and he married Virginia.
That's a slap in the face.
A little bit. But, I mean, it happens all the time, I guess. I don't know. Life was good for Virginia. Dr. Larzelier even adopted Virginia's two children, Jason and Jessica. He really cared about the kids, and he did a lot of things for them. Virginia and Norman became business partners at his dental practice. Gary McDaniel, private investigator, said that Virginia brought out the best in Norman as far as business went. Norman made the money and Virginia managed it. She managed to build an estate for them as well. They worked every day side by side in the office. Virginia was a people person, and a lot of times people have anxiety when they go to the dentist office. I know I do.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I get very nervous, but Virginia was the kind of person that could put people at ease when they had anxiety when they got to the dentist office. Virginia worked hard at the office, but she also had the couple's two sons in the early years of their marriage. So she had a daughter and son from a previous marriage, and then she had two children together with Norman.
And he had two kids with his wife, or?
It did not say that he had any children.
Oh, it didn't. Okay.
By 1991, the family was growing. They had a successful business and a two-story mansion with a pool, tennis courts, and they had a luxury vacation home on Amory Island.
Wow.
I know. They were busy little bees. Mm-hmm. They had expensive cars, boats. They even bought a private plane. She definitely escaped her small town, small bank account beginnings, and she seemed to enjoy her job, her position, and her money. She always dressed nice. Grace Cash, former employee, said that she knew Virginia always had the best of everything. She said that Virginia often talked about her plastic surgeries. She wasn't shy about it, and her clothing and jewelry were the finest. Virginia finally settled down, or so it seemed. In the spring of 91, Virginia and Norman had been married almost 6 years. They were rich, healthy, and seemed to be happy. Life was good. Too good? Jason said, "We did what we wanted to, went where we wanted to. We were planning to go to Australia. We had already been to the Virgin Islands. We went to places like Circus World, Disney World. We were a family." Where is Circus World?
I was just wondering about that. Never heard of such. SeaWorld?
Sure. He said it like it's completely normal.
Yeah. Like, and everybody knows Circus World.
Yeah. I mean, who hadn't been to Circus World?
Yeah.
I've never heard of it. I'm guessing it's in Florida, though.
Yeah.
That changed one day on a lunch break at the dentist's office. It was exactly 1 p.m. on March 8th, 1991. Henry Frederick said that Norman was in his office. His wife was in the back room doing some paperwork. There's a few footsteps. It was pretty quiet. A shot rings out. Virginia was hysterical and called 911. Virginia was told that there was nothing that could be done, that Dr. Norman Larzelier was dead. As paramedics removed Dr. Larzelier's body from the office, Virginia said that Norman had no enemies. No one would have any reason to shoot him. but she did say that there were objects of value in the office safe. There were gold coins, personal jewelry, and signed prescription slips, says Lee Butcher, author of For a Mother's Love. Detective Gammel said that they started looking at it more like it was a robbery, and maybe Dr. Larzelier saw that person and tried to stop it or knew the person and was shot. But when cops interviewed the office staff, they said that nothing was missing. That's apparently when things started to get weird. The dental hygienist who witnessed the shooting said that even though the gunman was wearing a mask and gloves, she recognized him. She said that it was Virginia's son, Jason.
No, she did not.
She sure did. Oh, yes, she did.
Oh, my God.
And a patient who was waiting to see the doctor said that he heard Dr. Larzelier call out Jason's name before he died.
Great.
But when police asked Virginia to describe who killed her husband, she couldn't get her story straight. At first, he was short, then he was tall, then he was Latin, he had a ponytail. It constantly changed. Dr. Gammel said that he honestly expected her to say it was the Kool-Aid man.
Hey, hey! Oh, yeah.
He said that?
Swear. Said
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Busting through that dentist's office. Oh, yeah.
There's a Kool-Aid-shaped hole in the wall. Like, I don't know what he looked like. He looked like this. This hole in the wall here.
Exactly. And he smelled like cherry.
Yeah. Okay. Get the sketch artist in here and draw the Kool-Aid man.
Exactly. Virginia could have been changing her story so much to protect her son, Jason. But why would Jason want to kill a stepdad? Police were about to find out that the Larzelier family was extremely complicated. Jason said that he was in Orlando when his father was shot. He said that that day he was in the mall all day long, which is not uncommon for teenagers, right?
I don't know. How old is he at this time?
He was, gosh, it didn't say when he was born, but he appeared to be maybe late teens.
Man. Yeah, I guess teenagers hang out at the mall, but I feel like that's more common for girls than boys to be there all day.
I don't know. Were different in the early 90s.
I guess that's true. Yeah. We weren't allowed to hang out anywhere.
No.
So I don't know how long people hang out places. We were allowed to be at home in the backyard. If we even thought about going in the front yard,
we were grounded.
Yeah.
Exactly. Police decided to begin the investigation by looking into the dental practice, but it did not take long for them to find out that the practice did more than clean teeth and fill cavities.
Uh-oh.
Clever girl.
Clever girl.
Lee Butcher said that Virginia billed patients that never came in for dental work. She falsified records and charged for dental work that they had never done.
What?
Yep. She also wrote prescriptions and got drugs and sold them.
Oh my gosh. That's horrible.
She and Jason apparently sold the drugs.
She's getting drugs, having her teenage son.
Help her sell them, yes.
I'm appalled.
She was doing just about everything wrong that you could think of. And the more she got away with, the more bold she seemed to get.
Seems that way.
As part of the investigation, police unearthed Virginia's sexual history. There was a string of conquests that hadn't ended once she married Norman. Through the investigation, they found out that she was the kind of woman that had to have different men. Dr. Helen Smith said,
"We hear about men who do this to women, but women who do it to men usually have a sense that they want power, and that's probably the way she wanted to see herself, as somebody powerful, as somebody who had status."
She also says that a woman like Virginia is never satisfied with just getting away with it. They have to up the ante and see who else or what else they can get away with. And there's no telling how far someone like that can go. Police wondered if, because she was capable of cheating and selling drugs, was she capable of murder? They found that Virginia had taken out over $2 million in life insurance policies on Norman that he was not aware of and felt it was entirely possible.
That's another thing. Like, these people take out these life insurance policies and don't tell. Like, if it was like they went in together and got them, it would be less suspicious. But you're holding up like a sign that's blinking and saying, "Look at me, look at me."
Exactly. Then they focused on the home life and heard some unusual things. It started when they brought in the family's helper, Stephen Heidel. He was brought in for questioning, and Jason said that Steve Heidel was someone they had met in Orlando and he had ingratiated himself. And it wasn't before too long he was getting a weekly check for picking up dry cleaning, for doing whatever. Heidel gave police the murder weapon. Police kept interviewing him, and finally he told them that he put the shotgun in concrete, drove up to Pelster Creek near Jacksonville, Florida, and threw it over. They searched the creek and found the gun. He said that he had gotten rid of it at Jason and Virginia's request, but police noticed something strange. He was the exact same size as Jason. Detective Gamble said that he was the same build, same height, same stature, everything. So could it have been that Steve Heidel was the killer and just very much appeared to be Jason?
Right, just look like Jason. Curiouser and curiouser.
I know. When police interrogated the Larzelier's housekeeper, Kristen Palmieri, she corroborated Steve Heidel's story. Faced with the prospect of being arrested for murder, Kristen and Steve cut a deal with the prosecutors. Prosecutors needed their testimony to go after Jason and Virginia. On May 5th, 1991, both Jason and Virginia were charged with first-degree murder in the death of Norman Larzelier. Jason said he heard that he was being looked at as a suspect, and he heard that there was an arrest warrant out for him, so he turned himself in. Virginia turned herself in as well, and in the state of Florida, there is no bond for being charged with murder, so she remained incarcerated at Volusia County Jail. They took her Mercedes, her BMWs, her estate, a prosperous career, and put her in an 8x10 cell. Donna Morris said that she didn't think that she liked the fact that she had to wear prison clothes.
I bet.
Going from wearing only Gucci.
Right.
I don't think Gucci designs prison wear. I don't know.
Hey, maybe that's a thing.
I don't know. I mean, for an upscale lady such as Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta have stuff to spend your commissary on, right?
True.
Buy new outfits.
Right. From day one, Virginia was confident that she and Jason would be let go. Virginia hired a big-time lawyer to take on her case, and they centered her defense around Steve Heidel. Jason and Virginia were tried separately. Virginia went first, and her defense was that Steve broke into the dentist's office, robbed it, and shot Norman.
I bet Steve is like, are you serious?
Squeeze me.
This is not cool.
Okay, let's just go down that road for a second. Let's just say maybe that happened. What did he steal? Nothing was missing.
Big fat nothing, yeah.
That ain't cold water.
Right, so who then gains by him being dead? Not Steve.
No.
You know, because unless he steals something, he gains nothing. But she still benefits from the life insurance policy.
Exactly. She stood trial for capital murder, and if convicted, she could get the death penalty. Virginia appeared confident, even arrogant, as she sat at the defense table. She was cool as a cucumber, according to Celeste Lester. She said that she didn't show any remorse, no tears shed, just seemed to be in control of herself. Prosecution said that Virginia was cold and calculated and set up Norman's murder to get millions of dollars in life insurance policies. Prosecution began with laying out Virginia's numerous affairs, and the defense argued that Norman knew about the affairs and was okay with them.
That's not usually how that goes.
I mean, people's marriage is complicated. Like, who knows what was okay and what was not okay in their marriage? I don't know. This is kind of along the same lines of other cases that we have looked into where it's like, well, you have an answer for everything.
Uh-huh.
And that doesn't look good.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, there are marriages that are okay with that kind of stuff, but I would like to talk to other people in their lives and know if everybody knew she was having affairs or if like Norman's family was like, yeah, you know, he knew. But if the only person saying he knew is Virginia, but she also took steps to hide the affairs,
then really,
you know,
makes
in
sense.
Their everyday life, then yeah. I don't believe that.
Exactly. Just, I don't know. It does not make any sense.
Yeah. But like every time, like Scott Peterson, even when we covered that on the other show, he's like, oh yeah, Lacey knew about Amber. No, she did not.
Mm-mm.
No, she did not.
It's very convenient that you say that after something big has happened.
Yeah, because you're saying it's not motive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jason said that his mother and father's relationship was very open and that they had one couple that they flew around with and they flew and swung.
That's like a yucky thing to have to tell.
About your parents?
Yeah. That's just weird.
Well, I mean, coming from, I don't know. I mean, I feel like this is a normal thing. Like, even when your parents kiss, you're like, ew, gross. Kiss each other.
Mm-hmm.
But to know that they're like, I mean, parents are people too.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. It's just gotta be kind of awkward to discuss.
Yeah.
I don't know. John Howes, defense attorney for Virginia Larzelier, said, At each time we could prove something that didn't add up or wasn't true, that's what we did. So basically, it was an attack on the evidence showing that the evidence didn't necessarily prove the state would argue it would prove. I had to watch that part of the episode probably 4 times to get the sentence that he was saying, and reading it now, it still doesn't make any sense to me.
It feels like he missed a word. The evidence didn't necessarily prove the state's argument of what it would prove or something. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
I know what he's trying to say, but
the way that he said it, though, I swear there was a question mark over my person because I was like, huh?
Yeah.
And then I felt like it was kind of like a look over there.
Yeah.
It was very confusing. But we get what he means, right?
Yeah.
Prosecution didn't give up. They brought new evidence that was more insane than the last. They brought up something that shook everyone. They said that there was a sexual relationship that existed between Jason and Virginia.
I'm wildly uncomfortable.
So at this point in watching it, I was like, this is a stretch, man. Like, why would the prosecution go there?
Yeah.
It just seemed very, what's the right word? Forced? And then Jason starts talking about his mom. And then I was like, oh, okay, I see it.
Oh, no.
Jason said, my mother and I, we have a close relationship. And people have thought that it was unnaturally close.
Oh.
My mother and I, we have a close relationship. And people have thought it was unnaturally close. I've described an inner circle of love before. And I mean, lots of people have said derogatory things about my mom, but I could never see it or feel it because just always been on that inner circle of love.
Yeah, what does that even mean?
The inner circle of love?
It just means like he didn't lose her affection?
I mean...
And what does that mean?
I know. I don't know.
Ew,
it was.
I feel gross. I don't like it.
Gross at the accusation, and then I felt gross because I thought maybe it could be true.
Yeah, because he's definitely not saying like, no, that never happened.
It was weird.
Like, I feel like if it never happened, you would just be like, that didn't happen.
And also, like, okay, I don't even. No, I'm not going to go here. Let's say someone that we know has been accused of being in a relationship with like their sister or their mother, whoever. If that happened, I'm pretty sure if that was like completely unfounded and disgusting, I'm pretty sure you would have a visceral kind of like outward, emotional, passionate response. Like, no, oh my gosh, ew, no.
Yeah.
And he's like, listen, we were close. People think that we're weirdly close.
Yeah.
It's an inner circle. Like, he's very calm about it. I don't know how many times he's had to talk about this or, you know, been asked about it, but it was a little concerning.
Yeah. Concerning is a good word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Detective Gamble said that Jason took the role of head of the household and was seen very close to his mom, kissing her in such a way that you would not kiss your mother. It was just unnatural.
Ew.
I know. Because at the beginning of this episode, they talk about like what the case has to do with, and they say incest. And I'm like, oh, no. What are we? Who?
Uh-oh.
Huh?
Yeah.
What?
Yuck.
Prosecution said that using sex to get what she wanted was a tried and true way for Virginia to get what she wanted.
Yeah.
And she had used that to get Jason to kill Norman.
Oh, no. No.
Dr. Helen Smith said that he's right there in the house. She can control him emotionally and perhaps even sexually to get him to do her bidding. Many times women will use sons in particular to carry out aggressive acts.
Ugh.
I hate it.
I feel like that's such a gross misuse of
a love a son has for his mother.
Yes, because like I say it all the time, like, you know, if Andrew goes to the grocery store, my husband Andrew goes to the grocery store with my kids, my oldest son is 4. Every time, that doesn't happen now because of quarantine, but back in the day when we could go to the grocery store, if Ben went with him, they always came back with flowers for me because Ben wanted to get me flowers. And like, if we go for a walk in the neighborhood, you know, Ben finds those little like weed flowers or whatever, like they're not, you wouldn't put them in a vase, but you know.
Like little wildflower kind of things, yeah.
And he always picks them for me and makes sure that I get a flower every time. Like little boys love their mothers. Like he's always wanting to like protect me. If we watch Scooby-Doo, he holds my hand and says, "I'll protect you, mom." Like, you know, little stuff like that.
So sweet.
What an absolutely disgusting
misuse
and manipulation of that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I hate it.
And kids, I don't know when this would have started with them. I don't even, my mind honestly doesn't want to go there, but we're talking about it. It's just, he was just victim to that.
Mm-hmm. And obviously brainwashed because he's still on her side, right?
Oh, yeah. Prosecution called Steve Heidel to the stand. David Hendry, attorney for Virginia, said, "Probably the most damaging of testimony against Virginia came from Steve Heidel." Kristen Palmieri backed him on a story about how Virginia asked him to get rid of the murder weapon. Virginia gave them some muriatic acid to wipe the gun down so there wouldn't be any prints on it. Heidel found a plastic container of some kind and put the gun in there and covered it up with cement and threw it into the water. Prosecutors brought in the block of concrete and the x-ray of its contents. So they couldn't get the gun out, but they x-rayed it and found that there was a gun inside.
Mm.
I didn't even know that was possible.
I didn't either. That's...
it's impressive.
Yeah.
In cross-examination, the defense portrayed Steve and Kristen as opportunistic con artists who changed their story every time they told it. Jason said that both Kristen and Steve gave a total of 6 depositions, and in those, their stories change. Gary McDaniel, a private investigator, said that Steve's whole life was geared towards taking advantage of other people. He would target rich people. He was under investigation of bank fraud. According to the defense, if Norman's murder was for profit, Steve Heidel would benefit. Gary said that he tried to blackmail the Larzeliers. He tried to sell his story to the authorities. He tried to sell his story to national TV. And in the end, Heidel capitalized on every aspect of Norman's murder. Whatever their involvement of the murder, they would be protected by the immunity they received in return for testifying. Closing arguments were made on February 24th, 1992. After 6 hours of deliberating, the jury returned.
Looking as cocky as ever, Virginia stood to receive the verdict.
We, the jury, find the defendant guilty of murder in the first degree as charged in the indictment. So say we all, Daytona Beach, Florida, dated this 24th day of February 1992.
Jason said that he was in jail awaiting his trial, and when he was in jail, he saw on the TV screen that his mom had been found guilty. He said he'll always remember that. John Howes said it was perhaps Virginia's arrogance and belief that she could control and manipulate people that ultimately brought her down. On March 4th, 1992, Virginia Gail Larzelier was sentenced to death by a narrow vote of 7-5.
Wow.
Dr. Smith said that usually women are sobbing and feeling sorry for themselves, but with Virginia, the jury saw this arrogant, smug person who seemed like she had gotten one over on them and felt like she could get away with it and would possibly do it again. And that's ultimately what got her the death sentence.
Hmm.
7 months after Jason Larzelier's trial began, he was acquitted of all charges.
How?
I have no idea. They did not go into any detail about his trial at all.
I mean, if he did pull the trigger, I don't think he came up with that idea.
Right.
But
he's still culpable.
Yeah, and we decided Steve didn't pull the trigger, right? We decided the government decided that Steve just hid the weapon.
Right.
And he got immunity for it. But yeah. How does he get...
nothing. No time except for time served in jail.
Wow. That's Man, that's crazy.
I know. His attorney was able to put enough reasonable doubt in the minds of the jury. Jason's
good attorney.
I know, a very good attorney. I think that his mother could have benefited a little bit from an attorney like that. I don't know. Jason said that he's been asked many times, did you kill your dad? And he says, no, I did not. I was not even in Edgewater the day of the shooting. And despite her son's acquittal, Virginia Larzelier was on death row until 2008 when her sentence was commuted to life in prison. There are some who believe in her innocence and some who think that maybe she didn't kill him for money at all. Dr. Diana Falkenbach said that Virginia seemed to have gotten some excitement in her life by breaking some of the smaller rules, and each time she kind of upped the ante a bit. Kind of like a drug addiction. It works at first, and then over time you need a little bit more to get that rush. And as of this episode, Jason Larzelier lives in Europe. He remains in contact with Virginia, and custody of Virginia and Norman's natural children was given to Norman's parents.
Ugh.
It's icky. It's an icky one.
Yeah. And it... I just don't... Then who shot him? Somebody shot him.
Right.
And it wasn't Virginia. Who shot him?
Well, do they...
Somebody she hired?
Did the jury think that Virginia did shoot him? There was somebody who witnessed it, though.
Right. And said it was... And they all said it looked exactly like Jason, and Norman yelled out Jason.
Did Jason have receipts from the mall that he went to?
Right. Yeah. Did they determine that that was a solid alibi?
I have no idea.
Now we'll get some vital information. All of you millennials who watched all that know what we're talking about. But we have found some outside information about this case because it's really confusing why Jason is acquitted.
Completely. I mean, like, no charges brought against him.
And because, like we said, somebody shot him. Like, what happened? So we found an article from the Orlando Sentinel from September 21st, 1992. And this is right after Jason gets out of jail. So his birth father actually greeted him there, like went and picked him up from jail. And Jason joked, we're going to Disney World. And then they left to go to an undisclosed location. They didn't want the media to follow. But Lucille Larzelier, so that was Norman's mother, said that she was in disbelief of Jason's acquittal. She says, we felt it was a miscarriage of justice. We felt there was overwhelming evidence. We don't think the jury was able to put all the evidence together. And what they did was they convicted Virginia first, then they waited on Jason's trial before they sentenced her. And so Norman's mother is like, you know, no... There's no way whatever sentence is imposed on Virginia can make up for what's been done to our family. This today is just another real blow. Dorothy Sedgwick, which was the prosecutor, left the courthouse without knowing why her prosecution failed. The jury actually sent out a note to the judge saying they did not want to be interviewed, so we really don't have any idea of what happened. Lasley said he won the acquittal, which is Jason's attorney, by proving to the jury that one of the state's main witnesses was likely the killer. So that's got to be Steve then. Oh, it says there was never any evidence that Jason did this, said Lasley, who was also waiting for Jason's release at the DeLand jail. So then the article kind of goes through the events of what happened the day that Norman was killed again. But it also says, when investigators arrested Virginia and Jason Larzelier in May of 91, stories of drug selling and lavish spending began to emerge. Former lovers of Virginia came forward and said she had sought someone to kill her husband as early as 1989. One of her former husbands said he was mysteriously shot.
Whoa.
Black Widow.
Oh, yeah.
Evidence showed Virginia Larzelier had taken out insurance policies on Norman Larzelier's life worth $2.1 million. Meanwhile, her son had graduated from private school and become part of a stylish nightlife scene. He drove expensive cars and wore stylish clothes. Authorities said Jason was the gunman, but Lasley had charged in Jason's trial that the state's two key witnesses, Steve Heidel and Kristen Palmieri, had killed the dentist. They both denied participating in the killing. Investigators said Jason had become the gunman in a complicated plan that was supposed to eliminate him from suspicion. They said Jason feigned illness that would preclude him from being able to drive, much less fire a shotgun. Virginia followed through with the plan at her husband's funeral, prosecutors said, medicating Jason to the point that he appeared helpless. She later sent him out of town. Virginia Larzelier's conviction in February did not stop the story from taking twists and turns. A private investigator once employed by Virginia said he had evidence that a hitman had been hired and that neither Jason nor Virginia were guilty.
How was that even possible?
Well, then who? Yeah. Wow.
So I'm hearing everything that you're saying. The thought of Jason Larzelier being super popular in like the nightlife scene and wearing clothes, like stylish clothes and stuff. Not what you were expecting, were you?
No.
The photos of Jason Larzelier from 91 are not what you
they
would expect.
They don't scream. What were
nightlife
those?
Nightlife Playboy.
Kids or whatever? Like,
well, club kids are different, but yes.
But still, yeah. That's a nightlife thing. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, so check out the Instagram. We'll have pictures of Jason on there as well. Interesting.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, and tell us who you think shot him.
Yeah.
The thing about these earlier Snapped episodes is they're only like 20 minutes long.
Yes, without commercials, they come to like 21 minutes.
Yeah, so it's like it would be in a half hour spot, I guess. So they just can't, with them being that short, they just can't give a ton of information.
Thank God they expanded.
Yeah, because this is like, I feel like there's a lot more information we could use in this case. Like, I want to know, what was the evidence that he was at the mall? What's he doing with his life now?
Mm-hmm.
But what evidence did they have against Steve? I would want to believe that the prosecution would not give Steve
complete immunity if they thought that he actually pulled the trigger, right?
Right.
But it seemed like, because when in the Snapped episode talking to the, well, I think it was the one of the journalists maybe that was saying this, but he was like, they had to give them immunity to get who they wanted, which was Virginia and Jason. But obviously that didn't pan out for them because Jason was acquitted of everything.
Right.
So what would it have been worth going after him if they thought that Steve was the one who pulled the trigger? Like, that's just
exactly,
insanity.
Yeah, because if Steve did pull the trigger, you'd think you're going to find evidence there, and you're certainly not going to find evidence against Jason if you full well know he didn't do it.
I mean, I guess, I don't know. Obviously, having the gun in cement does not help because there's no way to pull fingerprints.
Right, especially if they put muriatic acid all over it.
Exactly.
Now, Steve shouldn't have hidden that gun.
No, he should not have.
No, he should have called the police. But
what are you going to do, I guess? I don't know.
Yeah, here we are.
Yeah. This was not my favorite episode, I'll say that.
Yeah, that's really crazy.
And that coupled with the nastiness of it all.
Very nasty.
Very nasty.
I didn't like that at all.
It was shady nasty.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to go on to casting.
Yeah, casting call.
Yes.
So what was the lady's name I was saying? I forget her real name. Julia Sugarbaker?
Oh, Virginia. Oh, Dixie Carter.
Yes. I think she could play Virginia.
Yes, I agree. R.I.P. though.
Yes. She could have.
She could have, yes. So we're saying Stanley Tucci for Norman.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so, too. I think that could be a good one.
What about Jason? Michael Cera?
Oh, maybe.
Maybe.
Yeah. Jay Baruchel? I don't know how you say his last name. Baruchel?
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Jay Baruchel.
Or even, like, Rick Moranis circa the 80s.
Circa, what is that? Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah.
Yes.
Possibly. Yeah, so head over to the Instagram. Tell us who you would cast in these... in the Lifetime original movie.
That would be Virginia Larzelier's story.
Yeah. And we love you guys, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.